Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for October 10th, 2010. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
And welcome, Catherine.
Hello. Greetings from Atlanta.
Yes, well, from Atlanta. I know people were talking about 10-10-10 being a special date for some reason. Didn't mean much to me. Either one of y'all?
No.
No. Why is it a special date?
Because of the numbers, apparently. You know, maybe people that get into numerology and astrology and all that stuff like it, but I don't get into that 777 and 888. But apparently, you know, people get, you know, find that stuff interesting. But there's been a big political week, and how could it not be when we're just a few weeks out from the election? And the Florida Senate race, that race just continues to stay in the headlines. The polls show that Rubio still holds on to his lead. But then, and that's causing people more to talk more and more about a possible deal where Kendrick Meek would drop out of the Senate race and throw all of his support behind Charlie Crist. He publicly says that's not the case. And I talked to a source in Florida today that said, no, not at all would that happen, in her opinion. Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it would be pretty hard to do, right? I mean, he's never going to get his name off the ballot now. So it would just have to be a huge advertising blitz to get people to not vote for him. And I just don't know how effective that would be. And, I mean, I would be surprised if the Democratic Party of Florida would buy into something like that. I don't know, but it seems like it's a good rumor. 3 weeks before the election, but I can't imagine that they could pull it off and make it,
yeah, it seems
be
like
effective.
One Crist would want to push, in my opinion, it seems like something that part of the deal would have to be Crist would have to say, if he's not a Democrat now, that on day one when he got elected, he would become a Democrat, would have to be part of the deal for the party to go along with it. Tim, what do you make of this?
Yeah, well, first of all, there is no way that's going to happen. What are they going to do, tell all the African-Americans in Florida, thanks for playing, but you know, your candidate's gone? Of course Meek is in the race to stay. You know, what brought all this up? It was thought originally that with Crist declaring as an independent, that would create an opening for Kendrick Meek, because Crist and Rubio would split the Republican vote, moderate and conservatives. That really hasn't happened, as Crist has pulled some support actually away from Meek as well, and Meek has been running third in all the polls. But you know, that's why the rumor started. And no, there's no deal being made. I would imagine it's the Republicans that are fueling these rumors, thinking that the Democrats are going to pull some 11th-hour stunt down there, and it's just not true.
Yeah, and I noticed the Sierra Club endorsement, and I kind of have a lot of respect for Kendrick Meek for doing this. Mm-hmm. He was going to get a co-endorsement, which shows that the Sierra Club, I guess, is really playing politics here. And he said, look, you're endorsing me equally to Charlie Crist when he supported Sarah Palin with Drill Baby Drill.
Well,
bold of him.
Not really. Look, I think that was a mistake. Earlier this year, he accepted a co-endorsement. I believe it was from their education association or something like that down there that endorsed both he and Crist. I think he's doing this right now to maybe help quash those rumors and to show that he is seriously in this race to stay, and that there is seriously a difference between him and Charlie Crist, and any Democrats that are supporting Crist need to come home. think that's just a calculated gamble on his part, but I think it's a mistake.
Well, I think it's
weird. I will say this. On education, Crist is more – he's closer to the Democratic position than he has been in the past on environmental issues. Catherine?
Well, I think that this co-endorsement business says a lot more about the organizations that are co-endorsing than it does about the candidates that they are co-endorsing. I mean, how lame is that, that you can't pick between three candidates, you can't pick one between three candidates? It's obviously, like Tim said, it's a political move because they don't want to pick a loser. What is a co-endorsement? I mean, I support Nathan Deal and Roy Barnes? I mean, wouldn't you laugh out loud if somebody did that? I just think
it's not an
endorsement.
They ought to say, look, anybody but Rubio is what they mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody but Rubio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I think it's time now to welcome our first guest. Ms. Fenica Miller is a House candidate, Middle Georgia. Ms. Miller, welcome.
Hi there. How are you all doing?
Good to have you on the show. Well,
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, you're running down there in Middle Georgia. Tell us a little about yourself. And from there, we'll ask more questions.
Well, yes, I am running down here in very red Middle Georgia. I'm going to turn it, you know, a nice shade of purple here. I'm a 35-year-old married mom, property manager and real estate agent for the past 10 years, respectively. I have been the chair of the Democratic Committee here in Houston County, the first African-American female to hold that position, former member of the Board of Elections, tons of community involvement, and have just been engaged and active in politics since I was probably 12 years old, making cold calls on local campaigns.
Yes. Well, so you told us about yourself now, about this race. You said Houston County. Well, tell us about the district, the state of the race, anything you like.
Well, the district polls about 49% Democratic, had that much Democratic turnout in 08. Right now I'm feeling pretty good about the race. I'll say a 50-50 chance either way, and we're still, you know, out hitting the ground, knocking on doors and making that voter contact. And the more people that I speak with about the issues facing our district in Georgia and how we've been underrepresented for the past 6 years, they all become Miller voters. So I'm excited.
Yes. Now, as far as your district, I guess it's a district that's been Democratic and Republican in recent years. Has there been any changes to the lay of the land or any events that have caused it to change?
Well, like I said, it's a heavy Democratic district. It's Republican because I'm running against the first black Republican to be elected since Reconstruction here in Georgia. My opponent is very well known. He has deep ties within the community. But there is, I mean, it's evident from the residents that live in the district that we have been stagnant. We've not experienced any type of growth and no progress since he's been in office.
Yes. Well, I'm on the show with Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett, so I'm going to pass it around to Catherine first and then Tim for some more questions.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us tonight. We really appreciate it, and I always like to, you know, recognize how hard it is for candidates to run, especially the first time, and we really appreciate that. Can you tell me a little bit about your campaign and how it's going and what the response has been in the district?
Again, the responses have been really, really good. We've just been running a grassroots campaign because, of course, as a first-time candidate, it's hard to get support from people who, you know, you're going up against almost a David and Goliath situation. So we've been underfunded but working with what we have. And, again, like I said, you know, we were hoping to pretty much ride that anti-incumbent tide and just making sure that people understand that our state is, you know, has been put at a huge disadvantage for anybody that's been paying attention to state government. You know, mismanagement of our tax dollars, bad policies. They've just walked all over the middle class and lower income. And not only has my opponent been silent, you know, during that debacle and on the side of those who trashed Georgia and put us at the bottom in just about everything, but he hasn't, like I said, proposed a single piece of legislation in 6 years to move the district forward. So it's time for someone to be in that seat that's going to get to work.
And I understand from, like, looking at your website and just my understanding of Georgia, that unemployment is not as big a problem there as it is in other parts of the state. Is that correct?
Well, unemployment is not as bad here because we have the base and we have the Board of Education, but unemployment in my district is. We have the highest number of Title I schools in the district, which, of course, everyone knows that, you know, that means we have more children living at or below the poverty level, and it's a heavy minority district. So when unemployment numbers come in, you know, they affect minorities disproportionately than they affect other areas. And our
so that's a big concern of the of your constituents.
Absolutely. No jobs there. We have service jobs, and the growth has grown around the district. Every part of Warner Robins and Houston County has experienced growth except for District 145. We're like a donut hole, just vacant buildings, you know, crumbling infrastructure, no investment. The rec department is there, doesn't even have a master plan for growth. You know, police officers, we only have 9 on the road at any given time in a city our size. We need to have 15. And, you know, my opponent sits on the education committee. He counts public safety as his strong suit. But, again, he's been silent on the issues that matter most.
So it's mostly public safety, education, and the economy and the unemployment that are the big issues?
Yes, those are huge issues. You know, affordable housing, we have an issue with homelessness in our district. We have an issue, again, of unemployment. We have no transportation in Houston County, which is supposed to be one of the most progressive counties in the state. And I have a high concentration of seniors and disabled and women and children with no access to services located in the center of the county. It's just ridiculous the amount of missed opportunities that we've had because my opponent won't book his party.
Well, I admire you for running, and I wish you the best of luck, and I'm going to turn this over to Tim now.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You're in a unique situation. I know that you've read all the stories that all over the country that African Americans are simply just not going to vote this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in your race,
mm-hmm.
you're an African American. Your opponent is an African American.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume that that's probably going to drive turnout up really high there. Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
I believe so, and I'm banking that it will drive turnout to the Democratic card, and also, you know, the independents here in Houston County. They're smart cookies. I don't underestimate the voters, and they know
mm-hmm.
who's been working for them and who hasn't, but black turnout is definitely going to be key. I have the highest black minority precincts in the county.
Mm-hmm. Now, on your website, When you go to talking about issues, the very first word
mm-hmm.
I see is education.
Mm-hmm.
We all know what's happened with education cuts in the last
mm-hmm.
decade under the Republicans. In your opinion, should public education be the number one priority of the next session of the legislature?
Absolutely, because education drives the economy. If you have an electorate that, you know, is not educated, jobs are not going to want to move here. They want a workforce that can do the job. And in order for us in Georgia and even in my district to attract companies that are going to invest in Georgia and bring good jobs here that pay living wages for people, we have to make sure that we're funding and prioritizing education and not prisons and putting our kids on a pathway to prison.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. David?
Yes, now Warner Robins, I know the interstate runs right through there.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact has that had either positive or negatively on the people of your district?
Well, really not too much of an impact on my district because 75 is on the opposite end of the county, and we're on the 247 side, so we're landlocked by the base in 247. So anytime that you come off the interstate, you can just ride straight down Watson or Russell, and you pass through the district, but you never get into the district, so you actually can see. We have tremendous opportunities there. Like I said, we're the area that's closest to the base, and 247, which is a major thoroughfare, we should have the same amount of growth as everybody else in the county.
Yes, yeah, so probably maybe some of the growth that would have come to other parts of the Warner Robins area maybe been pulled more towards the interstate.
Yeah, some of it may be pulled towards the interstate. But, again, like I said, we have the base there. And if you have to drive 10 minutes, you know, from one side of town to the other just to get to a decent restaurant or a hotel, you're, again, you're creating a vacuum within the city. And it's been going on that way for years.
Yeah.
You have to look at
now,
ways to see a growth there.
Yes. Well, now you're running a race in a gubernatorial election year where, you know, the focus should be more on state issues than national issues, at least in
mm-hmm.
our state. And I remember back in 98, the first time Governor Barnes ran for governor, he told the House candidates, get behind me and I'll lead you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
How has the statewide races affected your races, or have they?
They haven't very much. Still trying to encourage people to vote down ballot. And because, you know, most of the statewide candidates haven't spent a lot of time here in Houston County, it really hasn't affected this race very much at all, I don't think.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that it will.
And it sounds like you're worried about maybe undervoting down ballot. Is that the case?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If everybody votes from the top of the ticket all the way down, then we'll be speaking to Representative-elect Miller on November 3rd.
Yes, and that's a big effort. I know in my state house district, which is also includes the city of Rome, it had
mm-hmm.
every voter that voted for President Obama last year or 2 years ago voted for Bob Puckett, the Democratic candidate. He would have
mm-hmm.
won. Yet there was a ton of undervote. It was
exactly.
Hundreds, and,
mm-hmm.
and he lost a very close race. And so
and
that's
I
something
think
to
that's
be aware of.
Yeah, they're depending on undervote, and we're depending on them to get out because that's the message that we're honing in on. Local and state races affect you more than anything else. Nancy Pelosi doesn't even know where Warner Robins is, so don't be distracted.
Yes, good point. And I tell you what, ma'am. The fact that you're aware of the issue of undervoting says a lot about the sophistication of your campaign because there's a lot of candidates, and I'm sure Catherine and Tim can attest to it, that don't even realize what that is
mm-hmm.
3 weeks ahead of the election. They don't know until 3 weeks after the election, and they do analysis. So
mm-hmm.
That's a good thing to be aware of. Talking about the state party, how has the state party or the House caucus been involved in your race?
Well, they recruited me. They assist in some ways, and in a lot of ways they don't. Financial support, we haven't received very much in that regard. And I'm of the opinion, I'm a younger and a more progressive, I believe, and I think that if you're going to recruit and maintain and keep recruiting good candidates, then you have to throw your support behind them visibly. Visible presence for me will actually do more than financial because my opponent, the Republican Party beats us all the time. The House leadership on the Republican ticket, Republicans have been to Houston County at least 3 or 4 times to throw their support around my opponent. And I've not had that type of support from the Democratic Party. And it's unfortunate, but those are things that we can work on and improve on in the future.
Yes. Well, we always have the same closing question, but before I get to that, Catherine or Tim, any more questions for Ms. Miller?
I'm good.
No. Okay.
I'm going to assume that's a no then on both. The question we like to always leave you with is if somebody, Ms. Miller, heard you tonight and wants to get involved with your campaign and support you, what are some ways they can do that?
They can go to my website, and they can hit that contact information. They can go to, which is www.fanikamiller.com, or they can call the campaign headquarters Monday through Sunday, at 478-442-3706 and learn how they can get involved. They can make phone calls from their home. I just need all hands on deck.
Yes, we wish you the best of luck in the final few weeks.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys and continue to do the work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For joining us.
All right, have a good night.
You too. Well, I think before we had Ms. Miller come on and speak with us, we were talking about the Florida Senate race. Covered that pretty well, but kind of bookend that interview. Let's go ahead and talk about the other race in Florida, the governor's race. And the Orlando Sentinel had a poll. I'm not sure they actually commissioned it, but it was reported in their paper. Actually, Mason-Dixon did the poll, which there's been some debate on how good their polling is. But it showed Alex Sink 44-40 ahead. Now, that takes you down from 47-40, but Alex Sink's still ahead, so that can't help be the good news in a political environment like this for Democrats. What do you think, Tim?
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking all year, once I saw this matchup, especially with Scott, the Tea Party guy, getting the nomination down there, that here's a place where we have a real chance for a genuine pickup in a major race. How sweet it would be to get the governorship of Florida, especially right ahead of redistricting. She is an excellent candidate. We ran the best candidate we could have run. I think the Republicans, they just missed a chance there to, you know, put this race in the safe column by nominating Scott instead of McCollum. So, I'm pretty happy with that race.
I have a feeling Alex Sink would have done better than either one of those two fellows. Now, there might have been somebody somewhere on the Republican bench that could have done better, but I don't think McCollum excites anybody that much either. Catherine, your thoughts on the governor's race of Florida?
Well, I think I'm really optimistic about Alex Sink. I think it looks really good for her, and I was really pleased to thank you for sending that article, because I think it was very informative, as well as the, you know, polls, whatever that might mean, but just some of the descriptions of some of the attack ads and the fact that they're attacking her on something that is invalid. I think it's very interesting, and I'm very hopeful, and I agree with Tim that it would be a great pickup to have a Democratic governor in Florida. Would be amazing.
Well, when you see those type of attack ads, Catherine, you know who's behind and who's ahead, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if you look at it, I guess some people are disappointed because Rubio is such a right-winger that people think, hey, how can he win that Senate race? So we get kind of disappointed about Florida. But people have to remember, right now there's a Republican governor, a Republican senator. Picking up half of that equation is good. And for baseball fans, Tim, there's a good chance that Alex Sink can only get better at throwing the first pitch out, correct?
Yeah. I believe Governor Chris, how would Bob Uecker put it? Just a bit outside, right? What do you do, miss the plate by 7 feet or something? I mean, great big major league player jumped for the ball and couldn't even get it. Another thing to remember, that if people want to go to comparing the Senate race to the governor's race, now remember the Senate race is a three-way split. A lot of people that are voting for Charlie Crist are also going to be voting for Alex Sink, and a lot of the Kindred Meat voters are too. So if you combine the Crist and Meat vote, I mean, you know, it's over 50%, well over 50%. So you can see how Alex Sink is winning this race against a very, very conservative opponent.
Yes, well, it's a good one to follow along with others. Well, I guess we just got a host of different things we can discuss. One that kind of caught my eye was the West Virginia Senate race. And we don't talk a lot about West Virginia, but there was a polling memo on an ad they did. Or not a polling memo, basically a casting memo, if you will. And they said, hey, we need hickey-looking actors. with John Deere caps. By the way, John Deere was spelled without the E on the end. These Republicans that are such salt of the earth don't even know how to spell John Deere, which is pretty common knowledge in America. I don't think you have to be a farmer to know how to spell John Deere these days. Catherine, what, and then, of course, the governor, Joe Manchin, is hitting on this. Catherine, how much play do you think this is going to get?
Well, I think that we all expect actors to be playing in these ads. I don't think anybody is foolish to think enough to think. But I do think that the idea that they, you know, told them to be hicky and whatever that means. I'm sure they misspelled John Deere on purpose so they wouldn't get into any trouble with John Deere.
Well, I think that was just the clothing. In fact, I'm looking at a screenshot. The guys aren't even wearing John Deere hats, but it's just the fact they could have said rural, they could have said country might even gone over better. It's been hicky. I mean, it's just their verbiage. They could have conveyed it in such a better way. And it's just the kind of thing that probably goes on in a lot of races because you don't get a hold of those things. But Joe Manchin, his campaign managed to get a hold of this, and they're using it. And a race that he was leading early, had dipped into a trouble spot. I think this is going to be the kind of thing that may buoy him back over 50% because he's kind of a popular governor that's just running for this race in a very, very tough year. So I think this is the kind of little thing he may need to carry him over the finish line. Kim?
Well, Governor Manchin's return ad, where it actually mentions this ad, is a very good ad. The original ad, the controversial one, was filmed like in Philadelphia by actors from that area, and that's like the other end of the earth from, you know, rural West Virginia. But now for the bad news. The president has been the driving force in this election. The president has a 31% approval rating there, and as a result, Racy is about 5 points ahead. The way a lot of voters see it in West Virginia, they love Governor Manchin as their governor, but they don't want him to go to Washington and be another vote for what they see is Obama's failed agenda. Therefore, they can keep him in West Virginia and vote for Racy as a protest vote. I think that's the way they've been sent. Now, there's two things about this race that I think you need to watch. Number one, Bill Clinton's going to be there tomorrow. Now, that maybe will shake some things up because Bill Clinton is a very welcome sight to a lot of Democrats that he's campaigning for all over the country, running around like a wild man, as a matter of fact. That should help the governor there. And a second thing, and something that I think may still be in the beginning stages of getting some legs, have you guys been reading about Racy's is he, a resident of the state?
Oh, yeah. I thought that was
Florida.
Much more interesting than the ad.
Yeah.
That's another big point. Yeah, I think the governor's going to pull this out.
You're right. We need to hold Robert Byrd's seat. It would be very nice. And if we hold West Virginia, I think we hold the U.S. Senate, as a matter of fact.
Well, and you mentioned Robert Byrd. If I were the governor's campaign, I'd say, look, when Robert Byrd, who I'm, you know, running to replace, first took office, I don't know, who was president, Roosevelt or Truman? I mean, look,
Eisenhower,
I mean, you know, you elect the senator
and became senator, yeah.
Eisenhower, okay, still, I mean, you get the idea, okay, Eisenhower, I mean, you know, the guy that they only have black and white footage of, the guy hadn't been president 50-plus years. If you don't like the current national leader, it may change seven times, you know, in the next however many years. You know, I mean, that kind of thing. Obviously, Joe Manchin's not going to serve for near as long as Robert Byrd, but you get the point that you're electing somebody for 6 years one time. If they win re-election, that's 12. That's out-serving the two terms of a president. So I think I'd make that point if I were them. Well, let's go ahead and move a little further south to North Carolina. And to do that, we have another guest to talk to us about North Carolina politics. John Thompson, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, John, you're both on with Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith. John, you're a political consultant with Campaign Connections, one of the leading firms in North Carolina, correct?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Yes. Well, I know you do a ton of local races and some above that, I guess even up to statewide races, but we're going to talk to you about races that you're not directly involved with, but the first one being the U.S. Senate race. And this race was brought to us well over a year ago by Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling. He is a frequent guest on our show, and he told us, Tim, was it nearly 2 years ago, that he thought that this race was going to be one of the ones that should be turnable. But it just hadn't seemed to be that way. Richard Burton, he's not very popular, but he's not in real trouble. What do you see as the lay of the land, John?
Well, I don't miss Burr's hovering around 50. He gets up to 50. He might get a little bit over 50, and I think the most recent poll has him at 49. So my rule of thumb is whenever you're an incumbent and you're not breaking 50, you're not necessarily, you know, in the catbird seat. However, he does hold roughly a 15 to 20-point lead over Marshall at the time. The latest poll, this was the Civitas poll, and PPP did one also, but it's about a 15 to 20-point lead over Marshall. And, you know, problem we're having in North Carolina is there's not a lot of money out there floating around. In 2008, we had a 19% African-American turnout, and 90% of African-Americans voted for President Obama. This year we'll be expecting a 15 to 16% turnout if we get that. And in 2008, independents were breaking 2 and 3 to 1 for President Obama. This year they're breaking 2 and 3 to 1 for Republicans. So if anyone ever saw the book or a movie or read the book, The Perfect Storm, this is kind of the same situation. It's a perfect storm in the sense for Democrats, and Republicans are basically, you know, like in the movie, they're sitting at home just watching the storm formulate, and, you know, there are a lot of incumbent Democrats that are going to get caught up in the storm, and I don't necessarily think that they're going to be able to survive it.
Yeah, now, Elaine Marshall, it doesn't sound like she – the deal, you know, Richard Burr has not closed the deal here. Like in some other states, you know, they have incumbent senators that are upped in the high 60s with 30-point leads, but he just isn't that place. What can Elaine Marshall do to switch this around where she can close it to, say, a margin of error gap?
Well, number one, she's going to have to spend a lot of money on TV, money that she doesn't have. However – she's got a ground game out there. She's got folks out there knocking on doors and calling people. And that seems to be one of the things in North Carolina that's making the most, getting the most traction, is your good old-fashioned politicking. Neighborhood canvassing, live phone banking, you know, and then from there you're layering direct mail, radio, TV, newspaper, and then all the kissing babies and attending all the functions that you can. I think, and I don't know, some people might disagree with me on this, and I don't know. I don't think that Richard Burr is able to get over 50, because I think he might have some problems in the conservative base, because he voted for TARP. And I know that when he voted for some of those initial bailouts, he caught a lot of flack from his conservative base. So, in a sense, Elaine might not necessarily be able to attack him on that, but at the same time, she doesn't have to, because this is, I think, on the Republican side of the ticket, if you've been, you know, and everyone's aware of what's been going on, there are a lot of conservatives who are not willing to hold their nose and pull the lever for someone who they feel is violating fiscal conservative principles. So that could be why he's not breaking 50 in certain instances, that some of his base is turned off to him, because there was a big kerfluffle earlier on when Burr called his wife and said, you know, I just had this meeting, take as much money out of the ATM as you can, you know, it's a doomsday scenario. And I think that Elaine's been, that's been floating around here, and I think that that's reminding people on the right, the conservatives, that, hey, you know, this is a guy who you might not be able to trust when it comes down to fiscal conservatism. So that's just a hunch of mine. I have nothing to quantify that. However, you know, I think it might build into maybe some of the reasoning why he's not breaking 50 in certain instances.
Yes, well, John, good news on the Kudzu Vine, we are not above hunches. That is perfect political analysis on this show, so
yeah.
You're good with us. Seriously, Catherine or Tim, do y'all have more questions about the U.S. Senate race for John?
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I do have one. We have watched the effect of the Tea Party. As a matter of fact, we just talked about it in the race down in Florida. Has the Tea Party been a big presence in this statewide race in North Carolina?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that the Tea Party is everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But no, in the sense that I don't necessarily think it gets the attention, good or bad, as it does in other areas. There was just a recent poll, and I think, and I apologize, I think it was PPP that did it, and they asked the Tea Party questions specifically, and I think 45% of the respondents came in favor of supporting the Tea Party. So, you know, there's no, I don't get the sense of bad press or good press for the Tea Party. I think it's basically journalists are just being objective, and if there's a Tea Party rally, it's covered. If there's not one, you know, it's not covered, or, you know, there's no bombs being thrown. And so it's there. I just don't think it gets the attention like it does in other states.
So then what you really get down to in the Senate race in North Carolina is that this particular year, Senator Burr is just lucky enough to have the R beside his name. Is that it?
Lucky or
part of me wants to say
like
yes. Part of me wants to say yes, but on the flip side, I think that Tea Party could also hurt Senator Burr because you know, like it goes back to my initial statement, you know, these folks are not in the mood, from what I can see, of holding their nose and saying, I'm going to vote for Richard Burr just because he's a Republican. They might not vote for him, and I don't necessarily think the Tea Party candidates would vote for Elaine Marshall. However, this seems to be the year, you know, there are a lot of Republican senators right now scratching their heads going, you know, I should have paid a little bit more attention to this Tea Party stuff. So, you know, Burr is well enough ahead that I don't necessarily think he's sitting up at night worrying as much as maybe Elaine Marshall is. But at the same time, he's not at 50. Or he's at 50 here. He's down to 49 there. And I really think that these Tea Partiers, you know, they could just simply go to the polls and maybe say, hey, this guy voted for the bailouts. You know, I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to vote for Marshall, and maybe that levels the playing field.
Okay. David?
Yes, well, going back to kind of another statewide question, North Carolina, and Tim and Catherine may disagree with me on this, seems to be the most progressive deep South state. They seem to move towards President Obama a little faster. More Democrats have been elected for statewide offices, both governor and Senate, than most of their counterparts in the Deep South. And this year, you know, we're talking about a Senate race in Alabama or in South Carolina. It wouldn't even be close, but in North Carolina it is. What's different about North Carolina?
North Carolina's had – the Democrats in North Carolina have had a they know how to campaign better. They've always done it. They've got a better machine, and it's a well-oiled machine, and it's always being tuned up. If you just look across, you know, the history of North Carolina for the last 100 years, Democrats have always been, you know, there's been a few blips where we've had Republican governors, but the North Carolina Democrats, you know, from sheriff to city council, and, you know, you have your pockets, but the Democratic Party is better at campaigning. I think, you know, when Obama came in, and came into North Carolina, Obama was able to energize and basically was like nitrous oxide into, you know, an internal combustion engine that was running pretty good. So we had massive turnout. He was able to motivate your African-American and your youth vote, and that really pushed, you know, the Democratic Party over the edge into, you know, the victory lane in 08. So North Carolina, you know, saw a lot of success in the Democratic Party on the ballot in 2008. However, unfortunately, it's not 2008 anymore. And, you know, Obama's not on the ticket. And, you know,
the way the Tea Party and Republicans talk.
Well, and that's the interesting phenomenon, you know. It's almost kind of like, you know, it makes you wonder what would have happened in 2008 if the Tea Party had been, you know, this surge in 2008 along with Obama. It would have been a very interesting election cycle.
Well, we can be thankful that we didn't have that, I guess,
yeah.
Democrats.
But the thing is that, you know, North Carolina has always been kind of a, you know, your Democrats in the House and the Senate, at the state level, always been more fiscally conservative, socially liberal. And North Carolinians have always, you know, been able to deal with that. North Carolina is a very diverse state. If you look at a map of North Carolina, the largest voting population is between, you know, Vance County above Raleigh, just follow the 85 corridor down to Charlotte. And it's got every demographic, every type of business, every type of education level. You know, it's really, you know, just a good snapshot. So this year is going to be interesting. And I'll tell you what, it's all about voter enthusiasm here in North Carolina. That's the big, you know, it's not that the machine is broken. It's that voter enthusiasm gaps are, you know, the largest I've seen them. We're talking 10, 16 points in some areas. And I don't, you know, that's, the cement's dry also. And this is, you know, normally, and I'd say the cement probably dried in North Carolina 3 weeks ago, which is a little bit unusual for it to dry that quick when it comes to politics. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year. And, you know, is this going to force the Democratic Party in North Carolina to rethink some things? Probably. It's going to probably force the Democratic Party to up their game going in 2012, just given the fact that it's going to be a different scenario because of redistricting. But the Democrats have always been better at campaigning than the Republicans. And that's just, you know, you can quantify that by just looking at, you know, the governors and Council of State, State House, your State Senate, Congress. And, yeah, North Carolinians are sometimes schizophrenic. You know, we'll keep a Democratic governor in office, but then we'll vote for a Republican senator, sometimes two at once.
Even Jesse Helms, which is like Republican senator on steroids.
Yeah, and, you know, and speaking of Jesse Helms, you know, a lot of the Jessecrats are coming out this year. So that's in the play. Sometimes these folks don't vote every so often. So, you know, it's just a very interesting year in North Carolina. You know, I know you guys aren't focusing that much on the state races, but, you know, it's you mix the voter enthusiasm gap, the Tea Party momentum, the joblessness, the economy, and it goes back to that perfect storm where, you know, people are trying to, you know, swim and not sink.
Yeah, well, I know y'all. Your state has at least four congressionals that are really tight races. Catherine, you got any questions on some of those congressional races?
Well, I kind of have a general question that I'd kind of like to open up to all four of us. Just in this conversation and talking with Kanika Miller earlier and then talking a little bit about Florida, I wonder if this is going to be the year of, you know, skipped voting. Where, you know, I think these, John was saying, these Tea Party candidates might just not, they might just skip a lot of, instead of holding their noses and voting for candidates that they might not necessarily agree with, at, you know, sort of the lesser of two evils. I think it'll be interesting after the election to look and see how much skipped candidates there are. Maybe that's going to be a big play in this election. What do you guys think?
I'll jump in first. I think I saw that in the Obama-McCain results. There are a lot of conservatives, I would say call them conservatives, that didn't vote for McCain. So I think there's that trend in North Carolina where I think you hit the nail on the head, is that it'll be interesting, and I think we will see results coming back where, you know, Richard Byrd didn't get maybe as many Republican votes as he expected.
Yeah, and I think there might be a fair amount of that in Georgia, too. I think there's going to maybe some people that either don't vote, Republicans that don't vote for Nathan Deal, or skip down, don't vote at all, or skip down and vote for the Libertarian, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that is going to be, this pattern will be something to watch. Now, back on these congressionals, John, which one do you think is the tightest race of the four? Or five, even.
Miller and Shore, statistical dead heat. Actually, Shore's 2 points up. McIntyre is 1 point down, but statistical dead heat in the margin of error. I believe Price and his opponent, statistical dead heat, but I think Price was down 1 or 2 points against Lawson. I think Etheridge might be up a little bit against Renee Elmers, but I think when you factor in the margin of error, I think it's a statistical dead heat. McIntyre's in trouble. I think G.K. Butterfield's got a race this year. So, when you look across the state and you start looking at, you know, what is McIntyre, and I can't say Price so much, but Price does have some, and Etheridge and Shuler, they've got rural areas. You look at Brad Miller, he should be okay. You look at Mel Watt, he should be okay. What you're seeing is the people in the rural parts, the unincorporated areas of the counties, those are your congressional candidates that are having, you know, the tough fights right now. And, you know, the thing is, there are a lot more registered Democrats in North Carolina than there are Republicans. And a recent poll was done in North Carolina where I think it's 24% of the voting registered voters are independents, registered independents. And I believe two-thirds of them, when polled, were looking at voting Republican. So, you know, in our polling that we're doing at the state House level and the state Senate level, we're seeing, you know, voter enthusiasm gaps, you know, 8, 10, 15 in favor of Republicans. But interesting, we're seeing a lot of undecided still. We're seeing a lot of independents who are registered, who aren't really coming in as those 9 or 10s on the scale of 1 to 10 of how enthusiastic are you about voting. They're, you know, fluttering in around 7, 6, you know. So it's kind of quirky, but that all filters, you know, that all pushes back up to the congressional races, and I think that's why there are so many races right now in North Carolina where we have incumbents who, you know, 2 years ago, I guarantee you, Etheridge and Price and Shuler and McIntyre never thought in a million years that they would be in a statistical dead heat, not even 24 months later, with, you know, a neophyte, someone who's never been, you know, people that have never really run for office before.
Yes. Tim, questions on the congressional races?
There's been a story surfaced just this past week that if the GOP takes control of Congress, that they would then approach several Blue Dog Democrats, conservative Democrats, about the possibility of switching. And one of the names that surfaced during this story was that of Heath Shuler. Now, has there been any kind of talk like that in North Carolina, and would there be any chance of that actually happening?
Well, number one, I've learned a long time ago never to say never. anything's possible. Anything's possible. On the rumor mill, you know, the stuff that I've heard in the rumors about Shuler was that he was possibly thinking about running for governor and maybe primary. I don't know how much validity there is in that. Is Heath Shuler, would he switch? I would think that if he was going to switch, this would be the year to do it. Because if Obama runs again, and doesn't have a primary problem or anything like that, he probably is going to have a tough time if he's, switches party and you get those percentage turnouts like you saw in 2008. He might not, win that seat if he wins it this time. The only rumor I've heard is just the governor's race, and, that hits here and there. It'll pop up every now and then. I'll run into Politico who will say something about, I heard Shuler might run for governor. But that's, the Blue Dogs in North Carolina, they've always been looked at as fiscally conservative and socially liberal or moderate. And that's kind of where North Carolina is on a lot of stuff.
Okay. David?
Yeah. Tim, Walt Minnick, representative from Idaho, I think can give an answer to your question. I don't know if y'all saw this, but just the other day somebody had said, hey, maybe you'll switch parties, and he said, no, I don't have any interest in switching parties. But furthermore, if you look at what happened to Parker Griffith, anybody would be a fool to switch the Republican Party for the Democratic Party, because look what happened to him. The Tea Party went after him, said he wasn't pure, and drummed him out in the next primary, and he said that's what's going to happen to any Democrat that switches to the Republican Party in this environment. And I thought that was astute. And I think that would be much what would happen to Heath Shuler. The Republicans would run somebody against him in the primary, say, look, this guy's a real Republican, not this party switcher, and boom, he'd be out. So he might as well stand and fight with who brought him to the dance.
But is that just a dynamic this year, though, because of the Tea Party? Because I've seen people switch parties for as long as I can remember down here, and some of them not only got away with it, but they flourished once they did, like Shelby in Alabama, or like the Republican nominee for governor right here in Georgia, and the present governor right here in Georgia.
Yes, and you can go on and on in the past, but even in the Democratic Party, Arlen Specter, who had been around forever, lost in the Democratic Party after he switched parties, because party switching right now, I don't know that I'd want to be with the one that says, hey, it's going to be different 2 years from now. That's just my fault.
The only thing that might save Shuler if he switched is where his votes came down in the House this year. I know he didn't vote for health care reform. If he's got enough of those no votes on his record that he could lobby the public with and say, look, I did X, Y, and Z, and I didn't do A, B, and C, he might have a little wiggle room. I just the question is going to, in my mind, is what's going to happen after the election? Is the Tea Party, is it going to kind of say, okay, is it going to be like, okay, they've been holding their breath and they exhaled, and is it going to kind of dissipate, or is it going to keep on going and ramp up even more for 2012? I don't know.
Oh, it's going to go to Iowa and New Hampshire, and it's going to elect the next Republican nominee, which should be fun. We'll leave them with an interesting candidate. That's what I think will happen. Well,
I think a lot depends on how well those candidates do.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't do well, then I think all those potential voters are just going to take their toys and go home and, go back to their families and go back to their, whatever it is they're going to go back to. I think a lot is going to depend on how some of those candidates do.
And here's the trigger in my mind. How much, if the Republicans are successful in November, how much is that going to accelerate a cascade effect? Where people who were just not engaged become a part of that cascade effect and say, this person's thinking that person's thinking the same thing, I'm not alone, and they become a little bit more tuned in. That's the big question mark I have in my mind as far as, you know, I'm not. This is kind of a weird year.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you look at 2008 and you look at today, and it's kind of like you're scratching your head, going, "Okay, what happened?" You know, a lot of people were caught off guard. In '94, you know, it was kind of picked up about 3 weeks out, but that wasn't enough time to stop the tsunami coming in '94. You know, we at our office have been ringing the bell since probably March, after we saw polling coming in through the primaries consistently. We started seeing trends. You know, Brad's, you know, my principal started ringing the alarm saying, "Hey guys, this is, you know, we got to change the game. We got to get involved. We got to, you know, things are not the same. There's a problem on the horizon." So.
Yeah. Well, John, you're already talking about our topics possibly from the second Sunday in November through the rest of the year. It's where do we go from here, of course, after we see the results. Well, John, I want to thank you for coming on our show. And, of course,
yeah.
If people want your political acumen, they would go to campaignconnections.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
And they could get a hold of you and Adam Tesh and Brad Crone and everybody else there in the office.
Oh, yes, sir. We'll, you know. It's kind of, I would say don't call till after the election, because early voting starts on the 14th, and Dave can vouch, you know, he knows I'm going crazy right now. But yeah,
yeah,
we'd love to talk to anyone who's got any questions, and, you know, I look forward to being on here as much as you need.
Sure. Well, thanks for being on tonight and kind of previewing those North Carolina races for us.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, guys, I saved it, and we just have a little bit of time, so we're going to have to sprint, but our bread and butter, the Georgia governor's race. There was a little bit of good news, according to Dick Pettis, this week, but he didn't give us enough, but it basically said the Republicans are starting to get, like, I don't know about Nathan Deal. Some of the baggage is apparently taking effect, and people are giving Roy Barnes another look, and Roy Barnes' support is more solid than Nathan Deal's, according to those internal numbers, internal Deal, internal Barnes, internal insider advantage, I don't know. Catherine, what do you think?
I was encouraged by that report from Pettis, and I think that I'm glad to hear that he's, you know, working that angle. And, you know, Nathan Deal, just there's no good news for him with his financial circumstances. It's looking really grim for him, it looks like to me.
Yeah, Bernita apparently had him putting a second mortgage on the governor's mansion circa 1990, according to that double Confederate flag picture on y'all's site. Tim, what do you make of this internal memo, if you will?
Well, I don't know. While Insider Advantage was saying that, Rasmussen came out with a poll that showed Deal up 50-41. What is happening here is that a race that the Republicans in any other time should have easily won is staying relatively close, mainly because of the shenanigans of their nominee. You get the feeling, though, that Barnes just can't quite reach out and reel him in, and that Republicans are banking on one thing, that if this is a wave election, that that'll be enough to carry a candidate like Deal across the finish line. It's almost like he's trying to run the clock out.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Yeah, but they definitely have gone more negative recently, including pulling out this old footage of DeVos Porter introducing Governor Barnes, wearing a robe and a crown. And I thought that was like, really? I mean, anybody could tell that was a joke. That was meant to mock the parody that apparently started formulating. I kind of always thought that was a 2002 creation. I didn't realize that had gone on, I guess, as early as, say, 1999. So I found that interesting in that. But will that thing have any effect, Catherine, that video? Tim, you think it'll have any effect?
No, not really. I think the average voter's not even going to see or hear about that. What you worry about now is that most voters may have already made their minds up about this thing. You don't want voters going in this year voting D's and R's in that race because, frankly, Governor Barnes is not only going to need some independent support, he's going to need some Republicans to vote for him, too, that do not want to vote for Nathan Deal.
Yeah. Well, that's it's going to be interesting to watch, and we'll talk more about it. And Catherine, we lost her. I don't know what happened, but we'll say goodnight for her then. And for this evening, 10-10-10 is the Cudsey Vine.
Good night.